Coming at you live from Valhalla, this is Thor's Hour of Thunder, episode 69, James Bond Special 2012. This is Thor coming at you as usual, live from Valhalla. Although a friend of mine pointed out the other day, Valhalla is where people go in Norway when they die, not where the gods live, so I should be coming at you live from Asgard. Thor's regrets this and all errors.
Well, keep in mind, Thor, we like to record in front of a live studio audience, even though you can't hear them, because we always edit them out, and our live studio audience comes from the souls of long-dead warriors. And, oh, by the way, hi, this is Bolton the Brilliant, always ready to bring the light and the truth and an annoying explanation out of any reason to think that we have done anything false. And this week I'm coming at you from an undisclosed location in the London Underground, which also serves as a base for MI6.
I like it. We also have joining us Vidor. Vidor, how you doing? Where are you coming at us from?
I'm coming at you from Drax's station on the moon from Moonraker.
Oh, Hugo Drax.
Okay, so I just want to mention...
Is that the correct villain name? Yes.
Yeah, yeah. That's the correct villain. Yeah, Drax was on the moon.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got it, man.
All right, cool.
Weird thing is, I have only seen one other movie that the actor who played Drax was in, and it was the absolute opposite of a weird utopian potential world dictator. It was this really sad, tragic movie where he played a monk in Algeria that eventually was told, hey, we've got some like jihadists that are coming this way. And they're like, no, we're just going to stay in our monastery and keep praying and helping poor people. And the jihadists come and they cut off his head.
Wow. What's that movie called? I think it's called Keeping Up with the Kardashians.
No, well, talk about your sis. I'll figure this one out.
All right, so, this is the James Bond special. Obviously, we're going to be discussing Skyfall, also discussing our favorite Bond movies, our favorite Bond gadgets, our favorite Bond girls, pretty much anything related to James Bond. We're hopefully having Hogan. Do you remember him? He hasn't been on it since the 26th episode. He's hopefully joining us in a little bit for a brief review of the movie. But, we're, you know, if you haven't seen Skyfall, don't worry. This is mostly going to be a discussion of... you know, anything and everything Bond, although we're obviously going to talk about the awesome new movie. So,
I figured it out. It's the actor's name is Michael Lonsdale, and the movie where he got his decapitated was Of Gods and Men.
Oh, okay.
kind of like this show.
That's a good point. Hey, I like it. But I don't think I've seen Drax in anything else. It's actually funny. There's that scene in Moonraker where Bond finds Drax's the laboratory. So then he takes the police there. I think it's in Italy, and it's just a fancy room. But it's clearly the walls are all painted sets. The walls aren't real walls. So I was waiting for them to take those walls down and have the lab be behind it. But instead, no, Drax just stands there and keeps like reading his paper once they close the door. So I guess they were supposed to be real walls and it was like he moved everything. But I'm like, come on, guys, you already have the super fake looking painted set. Just have the lab be behind it. So that was probably my only complaint about Moonraker. A lot of people knock that movie, but I really like it. Jaws is awesome, and Spy Who Loved Me is definitely a better movie and a tighter movie than Moonraker, but Jaws gets a girlfriend in Moonraker, and it's got that...
No, okay, so here's the problem. I don't mind Jaws getting a girlfriend. I mind him turning into a good guy.
Well, it's not like he turns into
He doesn't turn into a good guy. He just, like, isn't... he just kind of become his own person, I think.
Yeah, exactly. And he also, it's when the guy talks about how this was, you know, this is his utopian perfectionist society, and Jaws realizes that his midget girlfriend isn't going to have a role in it. I think it's, yeah, exactly.
He doesn't realize, oh, wait, I'm a giant freak with steel teeth. Maybe I won't have a role in this as well.
But he cares more about his midget girlfriend than himself. So it's not so much, he only helps Bond because... like, it's, you know, it's in his best interest because Drax isn't going to help him. So he helps Bond to help himself. So, yeah, I don't think, and also they, I mean, Jaws was so popular, they couldn't kill him off, you know? So they had to do something. So he
gets like a scene of a guy in Boys from Brazil where the guy's really, really, really fat and realizes Dr. Mengele, as soon as he gets his army of cloned Hitlers, he's just going to kill off all the Nazis in Argentina and say, you know what? I'll just use my army of cloned Hitlers. I don't need you guys anymore.
The only part I've seen of Boys from Brazil is the part where Gregory Peck gets ripped apart by dogs, but I've seen that part like 10 times because it's awesome.
Oh, yes. So, you know, the reason why you haven't heard of Michael Lonsdale, Hugo Drax, is because he's primarily a French actor who acts in French films. So keep in mind, you know, other than Sophie Marceau and Gerard Depardieu, how many French actors have broken through into Hollywood mainstream? So that might be a reason why. It's not too much of a jump for him to get into British films, but, you know.
That's a good point. Yeah, there really aren't very many. I feel like there's two
significant films that he was in that actually did make some English and American market was Day of the Jackal. He's a part in Day of the Jackal. And he also played a character in the movie Munich about the murder, the hostage taking and murder of the Israeli Olympic team.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that. That's the one where most of the movie is Eric Bana as the Mossad agent, like, getting revenge, right?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. What's his part in that?
Where are you, Michael Lonsdale? The father of one of the athletes.
Oh, interesting. I don't really remember that in the movie. I mostly just remember I like Jay Burchell's line in Knocked Up about how he's like Eric Bana in Munich made Jewish guys seem badass. If any of us get laid tonight, it's because of Eric Bana.
Obviously hasn't met many Israeli commandos because they're generally badass. Actually, most people have to be badass in Israel because they train you to be that way.
Yeah, exactly. Or the lead singer of Monotonix, the Israeli band fronted by a dude who I think's in his like late 30s, who used to be a soccer player in Israel and then decided to found a like heavy. A hard rock funk band would be the best way to describe them. And he just does the show by like running around in circles around the audience because he's in so much better shape than any human ever.
Okay, so let me ask you this, Thor. You've seen Skyfall, correct?
Yes.
Why should I see Skyfall?
Why should you see Skyfall? For
I loved Casino Royale was kind of like meh. About the consolation of quantum physics, and you know, you gotta sell me on this one.
The quantum of physics.
The consolation of quantum physics.
Yes. So, I like Quantum of Solace more than you did, but I see it has had its flaws. I look at it as the Tomorrow Never Dies to Casino Royale's GoldenEye, where it was just a really tight all-action movie, and I thought it had very clever action, other than the opening scene where, like, they went way too Jason Bourne-y where you couldn't tell what was going on. This Sam Mendes directs it with a much steadier hand. It has a lot of cool realistic touches. It's the first movie ever where James Bond gets shot in, which is really cool. I think the best scene in the movie, the scene that I think will sell it to you, is they show the beginning of it in the trailer where he's tied up and he's meeting Silva, which is the guy from No Country for Old Men, his character. Javier Bardem's character, the main bad guy. And so he's talking to Bond. And, you know, it becomes clear that Javier used to be in MI6, and he says that, like, he talks about, you know, they only reveal what, you know, more of it later on, but he says that M betrayed him, and now he's, you know, sort of his own man, and he's you know, working as a mercenary for the highest bidder, but he's also...
Is this the equivalent of, in the first Mission Impossible movie, Jim Phelps being the bad guy?
Not quite, because this character isn't seen. It's supposed to be like he was presumed dead by MI6 years and years ago, and now he's been a, you know, underground mercenary for years and has gotten enough clout that he has sort of extra money to just fuck with MI6, because that's all he's doing. That's the cool part about this movie.
So it's like, whatchamacallit, 006 in GoldenEye.
It is like that, but the cool thing is he doesn't have any, like, his mission, he is not trying to steal money, he's not trying to take over the world. All he's trying to do is disgrace and then eventually kill M. That's his entire goal, which is really neat for a Bond movie. Like, there's really no way...
We gotta get her ready to replace her out with a new M, because she's getting up there in years.
Yeah, so that was what was cool, is the entire movie is about, you know, the first half is more like a traditional Bond movie, we're trying to figure out what's going on, and, I mean, where Bond's trying to figure out what's going on with the bad guy, but then once, and what's also cool is so there's that great scene with him and Bond, and then Bardem just starts hitting on Bond. Bond's tied up, and he, like, gets really close to him with his face, and you're like, oh, man, like, this is getting, like, you know, it seems like he hit him, and then he just straight up starts, like, hitting on him. He starts, like, grabbing Daniel Craig's thighs, and it's just this, like, really amazing, like, tense and, like, creepy scene, because you don't know whether he's just doing it to fuck with Bond or if he's actually, like, turned on by him. And then Bond starts sort of fucking with him back. Like, he says, like, come on, you know, don't you wonder what it'd be like? First time for everything. And then Bond goes, like, who says it'd be my first time? And you're just like, whoa, these guys are really playing off each other. And the both of the actors are so good at that scene. For me, really made the movie. And what's cool is, and I don't think this will give anything away, they end up capturing Silva about halfway through the movie. Like, actually, a person I saw, was she compared it to the sort of structure of The Dark Knight, where they have this main bad guy, and you know, Silva's more, you know, much less is known about him than the Joker is going in. He doesn't show up on screen until maybe 40 minutes in, and then they capture him maybe 50 minutes into the movie, and you're like, what the hell is going to happen? So I started thinking, like, oh, maybe, like, Ralph Fiennes is a character in it too, and I'm like, maybe he's going to be in on it, and he's going to help Silva escape, and it's this, you know, I don't want to give it away, because I want people to see the movie. What ends up happening that gets Silva back, you know, in the catbird seat, back able to, you know, because obviously the whole movie has to be him trying to kill M and him trying to just destroy MI6 and disgrace it. So it's cool to see how, you know, what happens. And they did, you know, looking back on it, parts of it were kind of like the Joker being able to, like, predict way too many steps ahead. Like, they kind of had that where it's like, wait a second, you know, his plan includes, how did he know that all this shit was going to happen? So that was a little unrealistic, but it's a James Bond movie. It's supposed to be unrealistic. So I forgive that even more than I forgave The Dark Knight. And that didn't bother me in The Dark Knight either, because it's a superhero movie. So yeah, I would definitely recommend it. It was definitely a different thing for Bond. What was cool is it's the same guys who wrote the initial script as every movie from GoldenEye until now. And I think it's kind of cool how those guys, like, they've always had then they've brought in a third writer to sort of polish the dialogue to better and less success. Like, for Quantum of Solace, they brought in the guy who wrote Crash to polish the dialogue, which I think is one of the reasons that movie didn't play off as well, because Crash is a piece of shit movie. But I definitely would recommend it. Yeah, I guess I'm interested to hear both of your guys' thoughts based on just, like, the trailers and, like, what you guys have seen hyping it up. Vidor, any thoughts on the movie, having not seen it but heard about it?
I'm definitely interested in seeing it, but I just hope it can live up to the expectations of the series. You know, like, I know they tried to reboot the series with the new three films, but James Bond is still, like, a character, and, like, no matter what actor's playing him, like, they got to kind of stay true to what James Bond really is, so I just want to see if he can do the role justice.
Yeah, that's true. And it's funny, it seems like at some points in this, they decided that they hadn't actually rebooted the series, because they brought back some things from older movies that seemed like it was supposed to be like those that still happened, like just subtle things. But I was like, wait a second, guys,
did, like, mention super weapons from previous movies?
No, but he,
Hey, remember that time that little Korean guy back in the 60s threw his hat at me? Oh, those were good times.
No, it's more they reference old gadgets, because they brought Q back, so they reference, like, the exploding pen from GoldenEye and the ejection seat in the DB9 and stuff like that. And it's like, wait. Did those things didn't happen in the continuity we're going in now. But I guess it's, you know, it's James, even though they rebooted it with the new one, it is still the James Bond series, which
But isn't the premise that James Bond at this, that in this movie has only been working as a 00 agent for a handful of years at this point.
Yeah, but what's cool is they sort of address the fact that, like, it's really hard being a double agent, which is something from the books. The books always talked about how, you know, James Bond lived richly because he, you know, 00, you could die any day, and he didn't want to, you know, have a pile of money in his bank account that wouldn't go on to anyone, so he figured he might as well blow through it. Yeah. So they sort of address that in this, like, they have him... you know, like they have him, you know, like that they try and sort of take him off the mission because they, you know, because he's too like worn out and, you know, sort of run through the ringer, even though this is because it's supposed to be, you know, he's been an agent for about, you know, what, like almost 10 years. But it's supposed to be that even that is almost too long for an agent, which I thought was cool. It was definitely they brought in a lot more of the humor, like it had a lot more of the puns, but they still had a lot more realistic stuff like him getting shot. And then there's a scene where he's trying to get off of a bridge on a motorcycle onto a train that someone's escaping on. And instead of him like ramping the motorcycle off of nothing, they have him run the motorcycle into the guardrail of the bridge and fly off of it to get onto the train. And I thought just that's in the opening sequence. And I thought just little things like that were cool to be like, no, wait, look, we understand how like physics and the world works, and we can make crazy extreme awesome things that still sort of work in a more, you know, the same way the first two movies did. But I thought this they did a good job of having it be like over the top Bond stuff but still be sort of gritty and realistic, which I was really happy about.
I want to know, what does Roger Moore think of this film?
I actually haven't seen his opinion on it. Have you seen anything about that?
No, but I'm sure he must have, because I do know that the whole 50th anniversary of Dr. No was an issue, so everyone was talking about, Sean Connery going to make a cameo or some shit like that, and I think to myself, what, Roger Moore played the role just as long, if not longer, right?
Yeah, he was in,
I mean,
more...
he played it terribly, other than the first few movies, they were... Well, the first few movies and then View to a Kill, which I love. Most of them were pretty shit.
I'm so glad that I've converted you to View to a Kill.
Okay, the only reason why I'm converted to a View to a Kill is not Roger Moore. It's only Christopher Walken.
He's amazing in that. We will have to have a...
But I mean, to be fair, I mean, Diamonds Are Forever is a crap movie.
Yeah, and that's...
Everyone has those, you know, in a tradition of greatness, a nugget of terribleness, and in a tradition of terribleness, the few nuggets of greatness.
Yeah. I want to run through you really quick.
Whoa. Buy me a drink first.
AMI Publishers did this 50 Years of James Bond magazine that I've been reading, and their list of the 23 Bond movies, counting Never Say Never Again, their least favorite to favorite. And I just want to run through it really quick and then get your guys' thoughts on it. I'm not sure how... I know Baldur's seen all the movies. I'm not sure how many Vidor's seen, but discuss... So, number 23, The Living Daylights. I really like The Living Daylights. That's actually my favorite Bond movie. Their main complaint is that it had that half of a script for Roger Moore where it was supposed to be all like funny and goofy, and then they tried to infuse some of what Timothy Dalton wanted to do and bring the character back to the novels, but they think it didn't succeed. Yeah.
The Living Daylight. Very good song.
Yeah,
very
exactly. It definitely is one of the best. 22, View to a Kill. I love that movie, but I see why it's on here. It's totally ridiculous.
It's a movie not so much about James Bond, but about Christopher Walken's hair, and we can all agree on that.
Exactly, that's true. Oh, we gotta get a photo of me with my reddish blonde hair, and we'll have to get an archive photo of back when you had blonde hair, and then put it alongside Christopher Walken's blonde hair.
Hell, I'm going over my associate's apartment later, and who originally blonded me, so hey, you know what? I might be able to get you a true Nordic picture by the end of the night.
Yeah, get it reblonded, and then we'll have the photo this week, if I remember, will be us two, and then with Red Grant and Christopher Walken and Javier Bardem.
The original blonde Bond.
Yeah, and Javier Bardem, because it'll be 50 years of dudes dyeing their hair blonde to play villains in Bond movies. You know what that means? We're going to be villains in the next Bond movie. I can feel it. Okay, number 21, Quantum of Solace, same deal. I liked it. I can see why it's not higher on here. Daniel Craig said...
It's just generic. It doesn't do anything particularly stand out. Oh, this was a good movie.
Yeah, the two good scenes in it are the fact that the villain is trying to steal water rather than anything else that's very 21st century. And the fact that he's like...
Wait, is he T. Boone Pickens?
And the fact that he's not, like, the fact that he's able to physically go up against Bond when they're fighting with those axes at the end is cool. They have a villain who sort of, you know, isn't, like, out of shape or deformed or old. And then the fact when they have Agent
Field. Well, let me put that to you. What about World Is Not Enough? They had a physical match to James Bond.
That's true, but I didn't like that because I felt like he was the lackey for the oil baroness girl. I felt like she was actually the one pulling the strings.
You can't have her in the climactic battle on the sinking submarine.
But I mean, that's why it didn't make sense.
What's Sophie Marceau gonna do? It's like, okay, by the way, I didn't actually want to sleep with you. I want to kill you. What's like, okay, the only leverage that you had over me was the fact that we were possibly going to sleep together again. Yeah. What am I supposed to do with that?
Yeah, but yeah, no, that's...
And they killed Valentin, too, and he was a great character.
I know, I was so bummed they killed Valentin. He was great. I hope they bring back Robbie Coltrane in a future Bond movie now that it's
okay,
rebooted.
Okay, I've got an idea for this. We do it, the son of Jaws, and we dress Robbie Coltrane up as Hagrid again, but put some steel teeth in him.
Oh my god, that'd be phenomenal. Robbie Coltrane would make a fantastic Jaws, but they'd have to have him speak more, since Robbie Coltrane has that fantastic accent. Okay, so...
Copyright, Thor's Hour of Thunder.
Exactly.
2012.
Number 20, Never Say Never Again. I don't even count that as a Bond movie. It's, yeah, I think that should be the worst one. That, like, Sean Connery looks so old. The only good part of that's Mr. Bean.
That's true. What was he M or Q in that? I forget.
Oh... I feel like he was neither. I feel like he was just like some attaché guy. Like,
oh no, it'd be the guy like, oh, welcome to the Bahamas, Mr. Bond.
Exactly.
Would you like to meet the villain and play video games with him?
Yeah.
Okay, let's go. I've tripped over myself. Who would have thought I would have done that? Wink, wink, audience.
Number 19, Octopussy. I disagree with that. I really like Octopussy. Maud Adams.
I like Octopussy's climax a lot.
Oh yeah, with the
plane fight. The plane fight is really well done, I think.
And the him dismantling the bomb at the circus, where he's dressed up as. I've read articles that say that's one of the few times that Roger Moore had any sort of tension in one of his movies, because they have him dressed in that clown makeup, but he's like deadly serious while he's trying to dismantle that bomb at the circus. You know,
like wait. Wait, he was wearing clown makeup?
He was.
I thought that was just Roger Moore having a, oh no, I have too many wrinkles today. I'm going to have to double up on my makeup.
Good one, good one. And then number 18, Diamonds Are Forever. I think that should be lower on the list. I can't stand Diamonds Are Forever.
I'm a fan of that one. Not, I mean, I agree where it's at, but I don't think it should be any lower.
Okay, that's interesting. Spider, yeah.
Spider, what'd you like about it?
I thought it was a pretty fun movie. You know, he's scaling the building and stealing the moon rover thing. And, I just enjoyed it.
Yeah, yeah, no, I can see that.
What do you like? I mean, like, his favorite scene. That'd be cool, because, I mean, there are certain aspects of the movie that I really like about it, but overall.
Favorite, I don't know. I just, in general, I like just the story. Like, James Bond's kind of not working as he's pretending to be, like, this jewel thief, you know, like he's not really identifying, he's a spy for majority of the movie. Like, I just thought it was kind of different than the whole series, and I liked it.
Yeah, yeah, no, I can see that, and it's cool to have him be in Vegas. I wish they'd have him, it'd be cool to have him, see him go back to Vegas. And I like Plenty O'Toole, she's a fun character, and I like the two gay guys who are always trying to kill him.
Mr. Wint and Mr. Kidd, that was what I wanted to bring up, because if I was to take one thing that I really liked about Diamonds Are Forever is, you know, Charles Gray, you know, as much as I love him in a lot of other roles, I think him as Blofeld, he was the worst Blofeld.
Yeah, he's much better as the narrator in Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Yes, that's absolutely true. But the guys who played Mr. Wint and Mr. Kidd, I thought were actually very creepy, very menacing villains.
Yeah, and what's cool is, like, it's almost weirdly progressive where, like, you know, I know, like, some older movies like All About Eve would be like, oh, this guy's supposed to be a bad guy because he's gay, but I feel like those guys were, they just, like, characters that happened to be gay but were still, like, cool villains, so I felt like that was sort of neat.
No, it's not so much about that they're gay. The gay part is not the menace. It's that they are quiet and affectionate towards each other, but also stone-cold killers.
Yeah, and I like how casual they always were.
Yeah,
like,
so
that,
I mean,
was
like,
cool.
You put any sort of couple into that, heterosexual, homosexual, anything, And just the fact that a couple could look at each other and say, "Oh, would you like to cut off the first finger? Oh, that'd be nice. Okay. this one's bleeding a little bit. Could you put some pressure on that? I don't want him to die too quickly. Thank you." I mean, that's just creepy.
I didn't know there was a pool there. when they throw Plenty O'Toole out the window. So then number 17, The World Is Not Enough. That might be my least favorite, maybe just because, I'd seen GoldenEye shortly after it was released, and then seen Tomorrow Never Dies even shorter after it was released. But that was the first Bond movie I saw in theaters, and the only part of it I really liked was at the end when it said James Bond will return. The rest of it I thought was pretty disappointing. It's definitely my least favorite Pierce Brosnan movie. And like I said, yeah. I don't like that. Like, I think they needed to have the villains better defined. Like, they needed to have an interesting way where the woman is clearly the main villain and is manipulating the guy from Trainspotting. But instead, you have the guy from Trainspotting, who's an amazing actor, and they shave his head and sort of, like, don't give him anything to do. You know, like, I felt like they got rid of all of the amazing personality he has in Trainspotting as that total psychopath. They made him so bland in that. The oil sequence where the oil turns into the naked ladies in the opening credits is fantastic. Nice to see Robbie Coltrane in it again. It pissed me off they kill him. Where they saw the BMW Z8 in half with the tree chopping chainsaw from the helicopter, that was pretty cool. But other than that, it's like you don't remember really almost any. I feel like it's a very unmemorable movie, you know?
Yeah, well, my problem with it was I didn't like the pacing of it. I felt that it had sort of a standard James Bond pacing that for some reason they slowed down.
Yeah, and then that's actually a problem I have with Diamonds Are Forever. I don't really feel one way or the other about Diamonds Are Forever until they Bambi and Thumper show up and they're cool. And then after that, it seems like the movie's like 2 hours long for the last 30 minutes. And yeah. I feel like World Is Not Enough is that way in the middle, where like the middle of World Is Not Enough seems like it's like 9 movies worth of nothing happening.
Hey, but you know what the interesting thing is, though? Whatchamacallit, Renard, that character, Robert Carlyle?
Yeah.
He's now he's on television again.
The character?
He's the main antagonist on, what was it, ABC, NBC? Which one makes fantasy epics nowadays?
Is it Revolution?
Once Upon a Time. Is it ABC?
Oh, yeah. Once ABC Upon a Time.
Yeah. He's Rumpelstiltskin on Once Upon a Time.
Oh, that's cool. Is he good in that?
He's actually really good in that. Because you've got, he's sort of a meta antagonist. Because we have this sort of family of Snow White versus the Black Queen sort of thing going on. And then he's sort of the menacing, like, haha, I'm actually the one that they come to when I cut deals and I do black magic and actually I'm trying to screw everyone over at once.
That's cool. You ever watch that show, Viador?
I have not, no.
Okay, just curious. Yeah, so number 16, Die Another Day. That seems about right for that. I liked Die Another Day. I thought it was it had some really amazing stunts in it. It has some pretty shoddy computer graphics, but I think not nearly as much as people harped on it for. And the way they had the Madonna theme song take place over the torture scene instead of it not advancing the plot was so cool. I actually liked Madonna's song, even though there's only a handful of Madonna songs that I like, but I thought it was a good song and it really worked in that context. And
have to give credit in that movie. A lot of it was when James Bond has a tendency to, without a really inspired script or a really motivated director, to fall into a pattern, and you watch the same movie over and over again. And it was I thought the torture scene at the beginning was one crack in the armor of, oh, this is just going to be another James Bond movie. Because the first time, the opening sequence is where James Bond doesn't coolly solve the problem and ends up screwed over, that was interesting. But by the end of it, when I realized that we had stumbled upon a previous plot.
Oh, it's another derivation of the book version of Moonraker, basically.
Yeah, Moonraker and Diamonds Are Forever.
Oh, that's right. That's the same deal where they're building a laser in the movie version of Diamonds Are Forever, right?
Yeah, so in the movie version, in the Moonraker version, and the idea of the plastic surgery change of face.
Oh, that's right. Because, that's in the...
Because that used to be Blofeld's thing, and that's the reason why they kept recasting him every time.
Oh,
because
was
in
that?
Because in the books, they explicitly... Fleming explicitly changes Blofeld's appearance in every book because Blofeld, to keep one step ahead, kept getting plastic surgery.
Oh, okay. I totally didn't get that.
So I thought the idea of, you know, the young North Korean dictator turning himself into the sinister white diamond mogul thief guy was, that's really interesting. I wish they had done that in a previous movie that they executed better. But in this one, it was like, oh, we had to wait way too long to feel comfortable enough doing this, what would be controversial back in the day. But right now, it just kind of looks cheesy.
Yeah, I guess that's true. I definitely was also for, like I said, because I thought the action was so well done. And even though the invisible car is so gimmicky, like, they use it so well. Like, the scene in the ice hotel where he's driving around and he finally gets it back engaged and, you know, moves the car up just out of the way. So when the bad guy with the expensive acne, thinks he's driving into him and he just drives straight off the balcony of the ice hotel. That was a great scene.
That's another thing. It's like, look, a lot of these movies have just really, really good ideas, great scenes. It's just they can't string a consistent thing together the whole way.
That's true. And if you ask me to explain how he gets from Hong Kong to Cuba to England to Iceland to North Korea, if you ask me how the plot actually strings between those, I would have no idea. Oh, apparently they shot some more creative scenes, like under the covers of Bond and Jinx getting it on in Cuba, but they had to cut it to get a PG-13 rating, which Brosnan said he was pissed about because he said it just looked like, you know, he said the sex scene ended up looking like the sex scenes from like the Bond movies in the 60s, and like, come on guys, can't we make it like a little riskier? He was really proud of the director for like trying something new, and then he was pissed that they weren't able to, you know, actually get it in with the rating. For the top 15, I'm actually going to call Hogan in. So let me call you
Hogan.
Both back. Okay, folks, we now have Hogan joining us. You may remember Hogan from episode 26. Hogan, tell the folks a lie about why you haven't been on in over 30 episodes.
I ate a booger once, and it was full of cyanide, but just a little bit. So I'm back.
So you just lost your upper jaw was basically what happened.
Exactly. But I have this neat implant there.
Wait,
that's
not a lie at all. I put that there.
and it somehow caused
hell,
your...
man? Stop it, rubbing my spot.
And it inexplicably caused your hair to turn blonde.
And turned me slightly gay.
Oh my gosh, you're friggin' Roger Moore. You have a future in Bond.
I love that we were trying to describe Javier Bardem's character in the new Bond movie, but you're right, we also, minus the no jaw thing, described Roger Moore.
Roger Moore!
I forget what thing I was reading. I do like Roger Moore, but I was reading something that said, they said, live and let die. They said, the least suspenseful Bond movie ever. They said, Bond gets his assignment from M and jets off to solve it. No, wait, he goes to his fucking tailor. And if you watch the movie, that's really what happens in Live and Let Die. They're like, we must do this, it's very important. He's gonna get cocaine everywhere. And he's like, good idea, I'm going to go to the club.
I must be prepared to encounter the black people. They like well-dressed men, I hear, in the Bronx.
Yeah.
It's like, oh my god, even when you try to make this less racist, it's still incredibly racist.
Yeah, I remember, like, before I'd really seen Live and Let Die, I knew what was up with it. Hogan was watching it on TV one time in, like, middle school, and I was like, oh, that's cool, there's all these minorities in this movie. And he's like, no, they're all bad guys when one of them appears to be made of snakes. Yeah, not a very progressive movie, even for its time. So number 15 on the list is For Your Eyes Only. And everybody loves this because
only significant because it puts the bad guy in a very, very unique category.
A guy who's on a big-ass mountain?
No. It makes him a bad guy who has, or Julian Glover, the name of the actor, as someone who's played a bad guy in James Bond, Indiana Jones, Star Wars, and Doctor Who.
Oh, this is the guy I always get confused with Blofeld in Diamonds Are Forever.
Charles Gray, yes. No, yeah. We're talking about this one who played General Veers in Empire Strikes Back, who played Donovan in Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, who played the ugly, snaky-faced, cyclopid alien, Count something Italian in the Doctor Who series City of Death, and which one am I? Oh, and of course for your Eyes Only, where he played Stavros, I believe is the name of the character.
Yeah, it's funny. I don't remember him at all in that. The only thing I remember is...
He's sort of like an evil Aristotle Onassis. what the character's supposed to be.
The only thing I remember is his henchman, who was like had really dark hair, right? And yeah, that's the only thing I remember about that is when Bond's fighting on the plane at the end, right? He has this like henchman who's fighting Bond.
Yes. Also, there's the... I like the scene where he was dragging Bond from behind his boat over coral reefs so that Bond would cut himself and then become bait for sharks and tuna that would come and eat him because he was bleeding.
That's cool. I don't remember that. Yeah, the only thing I remember is them.
Yeah, seriously, I don't remember what movie we saw.
It's, For Your Eyes Only, and it
For Your Eyes Only. I have a decent enough memory to have at least one melodic line from each of the Bond film themes.
And you know what? That might be my vote for worst Bond
Count
theme. I don't like that one.
Count Scarlone. Count Scarlone is the name of the Italian character he played in City of Death, which was also part written by Douglas Adams.
Oh, cool. I like Douglas Adams. Who wrote Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, Hogan?
What did he did?
Yeah, Douglas Adams wrote Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, and he was one of the script editors and show writers for...
Did you say Douglas Adams?
Yeah. Douglas Adams wrote a bunch of Doctor Who in the 80s, and right 80s, mostly.
The late 70s.
Uh-huh. Oh, okay.
But he wrote the episodes where Julian Glover was the bad guy on Doctor Who, which put him in the club of being a bad guy in all the things.
That's awesome. But yeah, For Your Eyes Only, the only thing I really remember is Roger Moore as like the least realistic rock climber ever when they're climbing up that amazing plateau at the end. Was like, as much as Roger Moore never was like very physically fit, like seeing him like be like, oh, I'm pretending to climb a wall, it was about as realistic as Batman when they turned the camera sideways in the 60s Batman and he'd pretend to climb.
Yeah.
Wait, he wasn't actually doing that?
Well, if I remember correctly, the monastery at the end of For Your Eyes Only, it was supposed to be, or at least shot on sort of location, at the Mount Athos monastery, which is probably the like most prestigious Greek Orthodox monastery in the Eastern Orthodox Church, and where they only allow things of male gendered to be on the inside. So even like the Queen of England could show up on a diplomatic mission to say hello, and they say like, you got to stay at the bottom of the mountain. Thanks very much.
Wow. Vidor, have you seen For Your Eyes Only? Do you have any thoughts on it?
I have not seen it, but just looking at it, the monastery they use is pretty cool.
Yeah, that's definitely the best part. So number 14, License to Kill. I really like that
one. Oh, you're putting License to Kill on number 14? License to Kill is number freaking one.
That is a great movie, yeah.
License to Kill is a good freaking movie. Yeah. It is the best James Bond movie of the before Brosnan era.
Yeah. Benicio Del Toro's awesome in it. They got the two dudes from Magnum P.I. as the two CIA agents in it. It's a great movie. It's really cool. The scene where the bar fight where I think that where Dalton and Del Toro are having the fight in the bar and they end up using that like swordfish to fight up Del Toro. It was a really good movie.
I think you made a good point there, Thor, in that from here forward we should just talk about the movies in terms of the fight scenes and the car chases, because I mean, of 23 Bond movies, except for, you know, the last three and a couple of stutters throughout, the plot arc is pretty much the exact same. So, and I have no idea who any of the characters or any of the actors are. So I think, you know, you say License to Kill, the one with the plane chase.
Yeah. And that was the cool thing is, yeah, License to Kill is the one with a slightly different plot, though, because Felix Leiter, his wife gets killed, and he gets, like, eaten in half, but survives by
shark,
sharks.
By a freaking shark! And the climax of it is the Mad Max gas tanker truck chase at the end.
Yeah, that's true. Although my favorite part of that is that how Del Toro dies? Is the printing press, but the like conveyor belt thing that Bond like just throws him down into? Because it's cool to have, because he's getting revenge for Felix, who's still alive.
No. That's how he gets Sanchez. Because Del Toro is the mini boss in this film. He's the main. He's the Jaws, the odd job character.
Yeah.
The main guy is Sanchez, who's played by Robert Davi.
Who's awesome.
Yeah, so... Oh my gosh, I can't believe that people don't appreciate the best Bond film.
Yeah.
Which is The Kill.
No, it's fantastic. And it totally, like... I actually read a cool interview with the two dudes from Magnum PI who play the CIA agents in this. And they were talking about how they said, yeah, Timothy Dalton never got any credit. He totally did the same thing that... Daniel Craig's doing now, where he brought it back to be more like the books, where Bond's this like blunt instrument, and
just this really angry, very dark character dealing with absolutely terrible, brutal shit. And they just weren't ready for it.
Not a little character. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess that's true, because look at Die Another Day, which was the highest grossing Bond movie when it came out, is much more cartoony and is much more, you know, much more like a Roger Moore movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. So number 13.
What was it? How many Q movies did Desmond Llewellyn have past this one? Because License to Kill is the end of the Dalton years. How far did he go into the Brosnan years? I know he was in the GoldenEye, but when did they...
They tried
to switch him out for Cleese at some point.
Yeah, yeah.
But then they thought, when we're going to reboot the series, we're not going to, you know, go for the frickin' Ministry of Silly Walk as what Q charges.
And the new Q, well, me and Hogan will make sure to talk about that. The new Q was fantastic. I really liked it.
Oh, they finally got a new Q.
Yeah, yeah. It's,
Yeah, it was awesome.
He played the... What's that?
Is it Ben Whishaw, right? Is that the new Q?
Yeah, yeah. I can't remember what he's been in, but I know he was one of the many Bob Dylans in the movie I'm Not Here. But that's the only thing I know him from. Okay, so number 13. Oh, sorry. So anyway, Q's last movie was World Is Not Enough. He retires before the opening credits. Bond steals his boat that he's going to retire with and uses it for a boat chase through the Thames.
Yeah, that's the problem, because if it happened during either Tomorrow Never Dies or The World Is Not Enough, it just goes to a haze of like
See, I like Tomorrow Never Dies.
I stopped paying attention. Tomorrow Never Dies is not that bad, it's just not that good.
But, what's her name, Michelle
Yeoh? Jonathan Pryce is great, man. I thought he actually made a very convincing villain, and if you didn't see a blatant Rupert Murdoch thing going on there, you weren't paying attention. It was supposed to be, hey, look, what if Rupert Murdoch actually used his money to start a war based on conservative principles to bring, you know, people to, one, pay for his shit, and two, put him in charge of the country? Holy shit!
Yeah, that's actually the...
it's an argument for why Fox News should not have a stealth boat.
That's funny. The description of it from this magazine says, basing the character of a megalomaniac media baron on Rupert Murdoch is irresistible.
I mean, come on!
Yeah.
Like, this is the perfect villain, isn't it?
Yeah, for that movie,
I'm sorry,
loved it.
I just injected politics into this.
No, that's okay. I feel
never
like
to do this, yeah. But kind of an asshole.
Well, that's the thing is, and you and me have defended, like, you know, Glenn Beck's right to be on the air and stuff like that before. I feel like we're pretty middle of the road, but yeah, Rupert Murdoch's a creepy guy. I feel like no matter what your political opinion is anyone who sets out to spend that much money
watch out. He probably owns some server that this podcast is bound for.
Oh, seriously. Well, I feel like if we haven't been shut down getting downloads in Iran and Abbottabad, Pakistan, we're probably not going to get shut down by anything else.
I mean, if the original Thor's Hour of Thunder was any indication, the only thing that would shut us down is us being angry that they haven't shut us down yet.
or having too many people in the studio, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Thor, you're on. What? I have lines in this? Okay. Do anything.
So Tomorrow Never Dies, number 13. Yeah, I like that one. Looking at what they're criticizing, Terry Hatcher said that she didn't feel like she actually had a role in that movie. Like, they clearly just needed, Bond needs to sleep with someone because he's not going to sleep with Michelle Yeoh. So I forgot about the fact that Terry Hatcher shows up and sleeps with Bond and then gets killed. But it does lead to the best scene in that movie, where the guy who plays the ghost on the subway in Ghost, who teaches Patrick Swayze how to break glass, plays that assassin with that, like, ridiculous German accent, and he's like, they called me and they said they cannot get into your car, they want you to tell them how to do it. This is quite embarrassing and unprofessional.
Oh, yes. What's his name? He's been in, like, a ton of things and played a creepy guy. I was watching Amadeus. Great movie the other night, and
that movie is awesome.
He had a bit partner, because I think it was one of his first ones in a feature film, and what was it? And he's like in the first movie where he's like, Herr Salieri? Oh wait, no, I'm thinking of someone else. I'm thinking of a bad guy in a different movie.
This guy is also the hitman in Death to Smooshy, who falls from the rafters onto the ice.
You know what? Okay, so I'll give you an actual true fact that happens in Tomorrow Never Dies. It is a reunion of a romantic couple from a sitcom. So let's assume that Helen Hunt and that other guy from whatever their sitcom was called.
Mad About You.
Mad About You. Let's just say that Helen Hunt ended up as M. And the other guy just ended up as a strange, random character in one of her movies.
Oh!
It was the equivalent of that. it's a great actor, Jeffrey Palmer, who played opposite Judi Dench in a romantic sitcom called As Time Goes By, which lasted for many, many seasons. But they have a couple scenes in Tomorrow Never Dies, where he plays the Lord Admiral in charge of the East Asian fleet, saying, I'm going to go get China, and M saying, don't you dare, I'm sending Bond to handle it, so stop that. So,
oh,
but
golly.
I had a little moment of like, oh, isn't that funny?
Hey,
they were like supposed to be a cute romantic couple, and now they're just shouting at each other and trying to blow up China.
When she's in bed with her husband in Casino Royale, is that him?
Casino Royale? I don't think he's in Casino Royale.
That's why I was curious, because she has a man in bed with her who's supposed to be her husband, who you just see from the back when Bond calls her like in the middle of the night in Casino Royale at her home number. And I always wondered if they got him to just show up and be the guy from the back in bed. I thought that would have been cute.
I mean, that would have been cute, but I'm not certain that happened, but yeah. That was the big hey. If you actually are English and watching this, this is supposed to be a funny cameo.
Was that show going on at that time? Because I know it ran for like way longer than I realized.
It ran for years, but I don't think it ran this
to 97. Yeah.
So Tomorrow Never Dies was
97,
and I mean, I have a hard time trying to do the math here because I only know these through PBS. So, no, they were still going.
That's fantastic. They just
as time goes by, went until 2005.
Wow. So, dude, she was in Casino Royale while she was still doing Time Goes By. That's awesome that she's this, like, Academy Award winning actress and is still like, I'll be in my crappy British sitcom. I don't care.
I'm Dame Goddamn Judi Dench. Try to stop me. I'll do what I want.
Vider,
so I didn't know that when we talked about Q, I didn't know that there was one, like, once I saw his face, I totally recognized it, but that guy Desmond Llewellyn had been Q for, like, every single Bond movie except for, you know, the couple more recent ones.
He
went all the way from Russia with Love in 63 to The World Is Not Enough in 99. I was just reading here that he died in a car crash, but they said that John Cleese was introduced as R in The World Is Not Enough. So you think that was intentional because they thought, hey, this guy, Llewellyn is old, or do they think they put that in, like, post-production? I don't remember if he's ever in a scene there with him.
No. He introduces him, and what was crazy was they released the movie, and then he died later. The movie came out in, like, November, and he died in, like, late December, early January after the movie had come out, and it was crazy because he just decided he was really old and he wanted to, because he was getting older, I guess he was like, oh, well, I might die of old age sometimes, so I want to make sure I transition. I want to be able to have my goodbye to James, you know? So that was his idea. They would have let him do it forever. And then it was crazy that, yeah, he didn't die of, like, old man stuff, but of a car crash, you know? I actually remember I was with you, Hogan. We were at, we were up in New York seeing the Rockettes in middle school, and that, I saw that on the NBC News feed scroll by when we were standing in Rockefeller Plaza, and it said Desmond Llewellyn, in parentheses, Q from James Bond, dies in car crash, and I was crazy. I just remember being there, but, oh, that sucks. He was so cool. He was such a nice
man. Now that you're saying that, and I never
in a car crash. Maybe he shouldn't have used a remote control after all.
Q dies in a car crash.
Too soon.
Yeah. Hot cup of coffee falls on ejector seat button.
Exactly.
Why did I put it in the cup holder?
I obviously kind of remember John Cleese's Q when I was growing up, but they didn't have one for the first two Craig ones, and which I started looking at the covers here, the posters, and I'm pretty sure this isn't probably official trivia, but judging by these posters, I'm not sure, Thor, you're looking at the same thing, if these are the production posters, but really, there hasn't been, like, a girl on the cover of these, only in, like, The Living Daylights, GoldenEye, and then all three Daniel Craig ones.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Always has, like, always has this kind of, awkwardly placed girl who's, occasionally in the movie for a couple minutes in there. And I think it definitely says a lot about the new sort of Daniel Craig darkness rather than the caricature.
Yeah, no, he's definitely angrier and he's definitely alone a lot more than any of the other Bonds, which is cool.
So you're saying most of them had girl things except for the Daniel Craigs and the awesome License to Kill?
Living Daylight and GoldenEye.
Oh, Living Daylight, damn it. Hey, I found out something interesting about Robert Davi, who was the bad guy in License to Kill.
Go ahead.
He graduated Hofstra University the same year that Christopher Walken did.
That's fantastic.
Oh, the two greatest Bond villains at the same time. Oh, God.
Oh, that's too funny. Yeah, the only one I can look at, looking at the official theatrical posters, the only one I look at that doesn't is Man with the Golden Gun. Like 90% of that poster is just the golden gun being assembled, so there's no girl on that one either. But yeah, there's very few.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah, very few without a girl. Vidor, have you seen Tomorrow Never Dies?
Christopher Lee, after all, as you know, is beyond sexuality.
That's true. Also, the tallest leading man, according to Guinness Book of World Records.
How do you have that? Tallest leading man. How tall is he?
6,000 feet.
No, I mean, really.
I don't know. I have to look it up. But
okay,
yeah,
because I mean, like, do you want to, in terms of like leading man, do you want to count Stephen Fry in his Oscar Wilde biopic? Because Stephen Fry is like 6 foot a million, and he's a leading man. It just he happens to be a leading man with other dudes.
6 foot 5.
6 foot 5. Oh, Fry is 6 foot 4. So maybe
yep, there
this
we
might
go.
Be a true statement.
Yeah, Vidor, have you seen Tomorrow Never Dies?
I missed that one. I haven't seen it yet.
Okay. Yeah, well, don't worry. We'll keep asking. The hits just keep on
coming.
Yeah.
Wait, hold on. Did Michael Jordan... does Michael Jordan count, and did he make it with Bugs Bunny's girlfriend in Space Jam?
Bugs Bunny's girlfriend was so hot.
Okay, so she was, one, a furry, and two... a cartoon. So
doesn't matter.
You're going for a very fringe preference direction right there, Thor. So I just want to flag that so you can consider whether you want to go on record with that.
No, I'm going to say it right now. Whatever that rabbit's name is, not Jessica Rabbit. That she wasn't an actual rabbit.
Lola Bunny.
Cartoon,
thank you. Thank you, Vidor. Lola Bunny.
Lola Filano, but a bunny.
Okay, so number 12, Moonraker. Kind of surprised it made it this high on the list. Really fun movie, but ridiculous.
Not as good as Spy Who Loved Me.
Yeah, definitely not. Although I feel like we haven't gotten to Spy Who Loved Me yet, right?
No, we haven't. But, you know, it's significantly beneath Spy Who Loved Me that I really want to argue License to Kill higher.
Yeah, exactly. I definitely think License to Kill, like you said, should be in like the top three at least. But yeah, Vidor, you said
what? Even for just a little bit above it, I'd put Tomorrow Never Dies. I think Tomorrow Never Dies is actually a little bit better.
Yeah, Vidor, you said you like Moonraker, right?
Yeah, I was a fan of Moonraker. I thought that was one of my favorite ones.
Yeah, it does have the great line. I think he's attempting re-entry.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. Okay, but one thing that I really did like was Drax. I thought Drax was a really great character.
The main bad guy. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Drax is a great character, but so much better in the book. Oh, my God. Moonraker and...
Well, in the book, he said he's supposed to be explicitly working for the Soviets, because it was one of the earlier novels, so we were still dealing with Mersh, which was the actual secret agent office of the Soviet Union, and not Spectre, which was what they transitioned to and ended up using the 60s films.
Yeah.
The kind of Cobra Al-Qaeda international terrorist organization, and I can't believe I just compared Cobra Commander to Bin Laden. Kind of.
Oh, that's fantastic. But
international terrorist who just wants to blow up West symbols of Western aggression or what? He's a bad guy. He's an evil dude that wants to blow up innocent people. Yeah. Cobra Commander, Destro. Well, I give Destro a pass because he was also Doctor Who, but that's okay.
Yeah, Drax to me in the book is... I haven't read all of the novels yet, but Drax to me in the book is the scariest. Because, like, when he sort of, like, unhinges at the end, and, like, the whole, like, you know, the fact that he's a straight-up Nazi, like, who brings all his Nazi cohorts to England, like, it's very scary. That whole sequence where they're, in the book, where they're spraying the, you know, boiling hot water to try and kill Bond when he's stuck up in the vent shafts for the rocket is just like, you know, very like it's similar to the scene where in the book version of Dr. No, where he's crawling on the electrified air duct, where you're just like, you know, Fleming is so good at describing exactly what it would feel like to be, you know, tortured. Like, it really makes your skin crawl in a very compelling, effective way. But yeah, so I guess that's one of the things. I liked the movie, Moonraker, when I saw it, but then after reading the book, it was the same. And Diamonds Are Forever, I didn't like the movie very much when I saw it, but then the book is really cool, and I'd like to see them incorporate the train, the old Western-style antique train that they have in Diamonds Are Forever. I'd like to see them incorporate that in a future movie. I think that'd be cool to have the villain have that train.
I'm gonna actually go on a kind of inter-novel reference line here, and you know, all you wonderful listeners of Thor's Hour Offended, you can try to correct me if I'm wrong on this one. But there is a scene in Boys from Brazil and the novel Moonraker that is eerily similar, which is the when Mangala first shows up in New York, he is recognized by a Jewish businessman of some sort, just stumbles upon him in the street, and then has to come up with some way to kill him really fast. And that happens to Drax also in Moonraker.
Oh, I don't remember that part. That's cool.
Yeah. This might just be coincidence or generic. Hey, this is a way to out a Nazi war criminal. He sees a Jewish person whose family he killed, so he has to commit murder in return.
Jeez. Any further thoughts on Moonraker Vidor?
Just a fact I just found out looking it up here. It holds the record for the largest number of zero gravity wires in a single scene.
That's cool. Oh, I like that.
Really, even like over the Matrix.
The laser shooting and they're all flown everywhere.
Oh, that's right. When they go outside of the capsule, there's a laser fight between because apparently what Britain and, or the U.S. rather has a shuttle program that involves launching people to fight back against laser
with
warriors.
Lasers, it's called G.I. Joe. Thank you very much.
Yeah, dude, I remember they had claymation Albert Einstein talking about sci-fi in movies and like the problem, like the inaccuracies of sci-fi in movies at the Smithsonian. They had this little short film and they had claymation Albert Einstein being like, oh good, look, this movie's good, and he's showing a clip of Moonraker. It's zero gravity and look, they have to put suits on and go through a airlock. This is great, this is so realistic. And then they bring out the lasers and start shooting people and there's the ping, ping, ping sound, and he's like, no, there's no sound in space. And then someone blows up and he's like, no, there's no oxygen in space. And little claymation Albert Einstein getting all sad.
What would claymation Albert Einstein say about Event Horizon?
He'd be like, Sam Neill's eyes, oh my god, I'll never sleep again.
Or it's more like, faster than light sends you to hell. What the heck? What's up with that?
I like that your Einstein's British.
I'm sorry, I mean, I really despise going Princeton proper, so I don't want to do a racist German accent. And I don't want to do a Princeton proper accent because it annoys me.
Number 11, I think this one should be higher. Man with the Golden Gun, featuring the, AMC Hornet that flips upside down over the river.
Oh, right. that's got the flying plane in it. Or excuse me, the flying plane. flying car.
Oh, I don't remember that part of Man with the Golden Gun. I mostly just remember the
yes,
Hornet.
That's how Scaramanga gets away.
Oh, that's cool.
Well, because there's the flip jump over the bridge.
Yeah.
And the way that Scaramanga gets out of that chase is that he sort of seems to crash into a barn, but inside the barn there are wings set up that attaches to his car and he flies away.
Oh, that's awesome. Man with the Golden Gun, I liked how much it was about the villain as well. Like, that was cool to have such a well-developed villain. And then it's interesting that, you know, Maude Adams dies. Like, especially having, I think I saw Octopussy before I saw that movie. And, like, I was like, oh, it's...
Oh, yeah. I don't give her credit for double-dipping on this one. I think that once you're the first off-killed Bond girl, you just gotta, you know, retire your hat. Because in Bond films, there's always two girls, the one that gets killed and the one that doesn't get killed.
That's a very good point. And then I do like, I know some people think it's too campy, but I love the guy from Fantasy Island as the number two for Star Hervé
Villechaize, and as the role of Nick Knack.
Yeah, that guy's great.
Oh, master, despy, I will kill him.
And that
I really wish there's only one way that movie could have been better. If Scaramanga had two henchmen. Besides Nick Knack, he also had Andre the Giant. Like, ah, really tall Frenchman and really short Frenchman. Kill them both.
Oh, that would have been fantastic. And I like the whole...
Why are the biggest people and the smallest people French? I don't understand.
That's a good point. And the other cool thing about Man with a Golden Gun was that whole sequence, the like sort of arcade style, killing like maids.
Now, when you say arcade style, do you mean arcade, the thing that you go to play, or do you mean the Marvel Comics villain?
The Marvel Comics villain.
Either way, I love you.
Yeah. It's totally, like, I feel like, Marvel totally saw Man with the Golden Gun, and they were like, we gotta write an assassin who uses an elaborate, maze right now. Which is great. And arcade is so cool.
Yeah, that's absolutely wonderful. Yeah. Little known fact, once upon a time, Thor bought me the greatest birthday present ever, which was the first battle between Arcade and the X-Men.
That's right. I forgot about that. That was awesome.
I love you, Thor.
Oh, thank you so much.
Good man. Good man.
So, any farther thoughts?
On that note, I will leave you guys to the rest of it. Thanks for having me on. This is Hogan signing off.
Hey, thanks so much, Hogan. Have a great night.
I just want to make sure that you get your score. It's 33.
What's that, my score?
Yep.
Your score is 33.
Thank you.
Good for that. I can't tell you if you won or not, but that is your score for the night.
Have a good night, Hogan. Thanks.
Hogan,
I need just really quick 1 minute review of Skyfall from you.
The 1 minute review of Skyfall was awesome. I don't know if I'm just more, I don't know, I'm older to appreciate them more, but I mean, I think all the Daniel Craigs have been really good. I think obviously Quantum of Solace didn't get as much good review as I think it kind of deserves. And it was, probably out of those three, it was the least of my least favorite. But Skyfall just brought it all. It was like, even though it didn't have this sort of, crazy, some big organization or some, some big organization was trying to, take down something that they're trying to extort people for money. It had like a lot of personal stuff that wasn't done, that was done really well. It wasn't over the top, and it wasn't cheesy. It was good.
And I thought that made it scarier that this guy's only goal was to kill M. Like normally there's, a lot standing between MI6 and whatever they're after, but with this, he was straight going after them, which I thought made it really scary and really cool.
It was really personal and it was really scary, but it wasn't too, like, just this one person with a vendetta, like the typical serial killer or something kind of plotline they could have followed.
Yeah, like, it was neat that he still had a lot of resources, which made him even deadlier.
Yeah, I mean, and they went through his sort of story kind of briefly there, rather than, like, it being, like, the start of everything, and then, we know this guy is trying to kill him. It was just kind of like, who is this? It was good.
Yeah, I think it's the most sympathy I've had for a villain, considering how, like, sadistic he was. They really make you feel for him, they really make it seem like he did get screwed,
Yeah, exactly. And I thought it still had a lot of the, I think you had mentioned this, Thor, it had a lot of the sort of puns. They brought back some of the puns, but you had mentioned it afterwards, and looking back, and I was like, oh yeah, there were a lot of puns, but it wasn't to a level where I, either quantity or the type that I thought it was distracting. I thought it harkened back, even though we lost some of the, like I said, caricature Bond, we kept some of the typical Bond, theme.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. Yeah, I think it's my favorite of the Craig ones, actually. I really liked it. My one complaint was that I don't think kimono dragons eat people. That was my only complaint.
Komodo dragons can eat people.
Oh, do
it
they?
It depends on how they do it. The idea of the Komodo dragon is that it bites you a few times, then walks away, and then just kind of follows you. Because it's expecting you to die of the infection of the wound.
Oh, okay.
And well, then, yeah, as soon as you come to the wound, it eats you.
Okay, well, yeah, it did just, that was, it took, just took a big bite out of him, and then the scene ended. Or, I mean, and then Bond got away, you know. So that actually was, I didn't realize that, because they had a Komodo dragon, and I was like, I thought those things were just like lizards. I didn't think they were carnivorous. That's, thank you. You have corrected
very
me.
Huge, they can kill buffalo. They can kill water buffalo.
And you can't.
You know, I think we should be thanking Hollywood for this subtle but very good message that now they've all informed us that we should be, you know, if Thor and I had stumbled across a Komodo dragon, we would have been like, oh, this is really cool. Now, you know, one more thing we know we need to be afraid of.
That was the main point of this movie. I saw an interview with Sam Mendes. He's like, you know, too many people die when they fall into a pit of Komodo dragons in a Macau casino every year. I gotta stop that.
Wait, in a Macau casino? Yeah. Freaking, I don't even know. I don't even want to know what they got in the pits in Vegas.
Well, hey, thank you so much, Hogan, for joining
probably
us.
Probably clone dinosaurs and freaking Ian Malcolm. Jeff Goldblum. Right. Jeff Goldblum needs the work.
Have a great night, Hogan.
It was a pleasure. Thanks for having me on. And this is Hogan signing off.
Bye.
Good night, Hogan.
What are the top 10 Bond movies? What do Thor, Baldur, and Vidor think of these choices? Who stole my pants? Find out the answer to these and all questions you've ever had on Thor's Episode 70, the second and final part of the James Bond Special 2012. This is Thor. Have a good night.